Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this absolutely beautiful Tuesday, isn't it? I can never remember the day. Tuesday, the 12th of October. We are broadcasting live this morning from beautiful downtown Madison instead of beautiful downtown Milwaukee. And we are in our fall membership drive, incredibly important drive. First, though, let me tell you about our first guest who will be with us momentarily. On December 31st of this year, a decade's worth of tax code changes will be expiring. Our guest knows more about taxes and more about money than any human being I have ever met. David K. Johnston will be joining us, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author of Free Lunch, How the Wealthiest Americans Enrich Themselves at Government Expense and Stick You with the Bill. He's a distinguished visiting lecturer at Syracuse University, and we'll be talking about, I like this historical perspective, too. We'll look at a historical perspective of tax codes in this country and how much everybody pays and what it means for all income groups for these tax codes to expire and why the Democrats haven't come up with another plan and what the Republicans have for a plan. So it should be a highly informative and some might say controversial hour. But first, let me tell you that I'm Kathleen Dunn. You probably know John Munson is joining me in our studios here in Madison for our Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. And giving right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 keeps this program on the air. It only takes a few minutes of your time. So please make a pledge right now and make us happy this Tuesday. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Hey, John.
Well, good morning, Kathleen. And extra incentive for people to pledge right now to get us off to a good start because we have a dollar for dollar match.
Right, I like it. Yeah. All right.
Up to $1,000. This challenge is offered by a generous anonymous donor as her way of encouraging you to join her in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. So get your pledge doubled right now for the next few minutes. It won't take us long to get that $1,000 match. So get in right now if you want to be in on it at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
In just a moment, we'll be speaking to David K. Johnston about a new study by the Tax Foundation that examines how various income levels fare under the Bush tax cuts and what the proposals are for new tax cuts or no tax cuts. I guarantee you, this guy is fabulous. He's joined us several times, and every time he's on, somebody says he should have his own show. He really knows taxes. Discussions like this one and all that you hear on the Ideas Network are possible because of your financial support. So please give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Well, and it couldn't be simpler to give, Kathleen. I think we've made it as easy as we possibly can. You either go to the website, WPR.org, or call 888-202-2552. All we need to get things started, your name, contact information, the amount of your pledge, and how you'd like to pay it.
You can use a credit card if you'd like. It'll save both you and WPR time and also the price of a stamp. Or sign up for automatic sustaining donations from your bank account. Don't worry, we don't share that personal information with any other organizations. We promise. Give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Now, I'm willing to place a small wager on the idea that you've been listening to the Ideas Network at some point and heard something that just absolutely stopped you in your tracks.
Oh, yeah.
Something that was really interesting or really piqued your curiosity. Well, we strive every day for programs that open your eyes and engage your brain, programs that affect your life. And this kind of radio can only happen with your financial support because, well, that's just the way it is. At WPR.org or 888-202-2555.
I know you feel that, too, that you are sometimes so engrossed in a conversation that you just don't want it to end. An hour goes by just so fast, and it's just so compelling. It happens all the time. It really happens all the time.
I've nearly missed a couple of newscasts because I got so wrapped up in the conversation, I forgot to look at the clock. And here's a producer frantically waving at me. Time to take a break.
Exactly. Oh, no, it's over already. That's terrible.
Oh, shoot.
We want to remind you that we do have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $1,000 that's in effect right now offered by an anonymous donor. This has not happened in our show before, so it makes a difference. Your gift of $50 turns into $100. Hey, I sound like a math expert here. $100 turns into $200 and so on. So please take advantage of this match and give Wisconsin Public Radio even more money to pay for programs like this one. Get your pledge match dollar for dollar right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Still some room for you to get in on this match if you make your pledge right now at WPR.org. Or 888-202-2552.
Thank you very much, John. David K. Johnston is joining us now. David is just a real exceptional reporter. He is a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter for the New York Times who revealed that Enron did not pay taxes, that some companies use a Bermuda mailbox to escape American taxes, and he has been reporting on major tax policy made by the Bush administration. His latest book is Free Lunch, a national bestseller exposing the massive transfers of wealth from the poor, middle class, and affluent to the super rich. Who are the super rich in this country? How many people are super rich? How do they get super rich? And this book is now out in paperback. We talked with him a few weeks ago because we like to check in with him about what's happening with tax codes. We'll be looking at the Bush era tax cuts and who they benefited. Did indeed the poor benefit? Some believe that the poor did not benefit. Did they benefit from those tax cuts? What about the wealthy? And what will happen come December 31st of this year when all of those tax cuts expire? And why haven't the Democrats come up with some other kind of plan? We're very happy to have David with us. He is now distinguished visiting lecturer in the College of Law and Whitman School of Management at Syracuse University. He has written for a number of stellar publications, the Detroit Free Press, the LA Times, the Philadelphia Inquirer before he went to the New York Times in February of 1995. He studied economics at the Graduate School of the University of Chicago. He taught for 8 years at the University of Southern California, and we're happy to have him with us this hour. For you to join us, we very rarely come to Madison, so we're broadcasting today from Madison, and the on-air phone number here would be different than what you normally hear on our show, 800-642-1234. For your on-air participation. If you know what you want to say, call in early. The phone lines get jammed when David is with us. Hello, David. Thanks very much for being with us.
Well, glad to be here.
Well, we're darn happy to have you here. December 31st, 2010, a decade's worth of tax code changes will expire. What's expiring?
Well, all of the Bush tax cuts, which were adopted by a process known as reconciliation, that's what the Republicans chose to use to put it in place. You'll recall that is the same thing that was used to put in place the health care reforms this year. And the Republicans, for whatever reason, didn't have the votes or chose not to make these cuts permanent during the period when they controlled the House, the Senate, and the White House.
And tell me what the cuts did. We hear that they favored the super rich among us. A couple questions here. Who are the super rich, David? And did they help other people as well, people who are middle income, people who are poor?
Well, it is almost true when President Bush said everyone who pays taxes will get a tax cut. It turns out that because of the alternative minimum tax and the deliberate choice by the Bush administration to use that to reduce the size of the tax cuts, that some people in the $200,000 to $500,000 bracket got no savings under the Bush tax cut, or in some years got no savings. But generally, all taxpayers saved money. There are two fundamental groups that benefited from the two Bush tax cuts. One is the group at the top, and the average savings were enormous for the people at the top. The top tenth of 1% of Americans, that's 1 in 1,000 people, and these are all people who make at least $2 million a year in today's dollars, got 1/8 of the tax cuts. So 12.5% of the tax cuts went to 0.1% of Americans. Now, the other group that principally benefited were parents with children, because the child tax credit, which the Republicans have been championing since the mid-1990s, increased under the Bush tax cuts. And so if you made enough money to pay taxes and had children and were in the mid-five-figure range of income, you got a big savings. And the poor also benefited, but all of us benefited from this last provision, which is under Clinton and previous presidents, the first level of income tax was 15% of your taxable income. That is your total income minus whatever deductions and exemptions you had. And the Bush tax cuts put in place a 10% rate that everybody gets. Warren Buffett gets it. You get it. I get it. On their first, it was $6,000. I believe next year, if it's continued, it will be the first $8,500 for a single person, and therefore it would be $17,000 for a couple.
Mm-hmm. The Tax Foundation, as you know, David, released a report late last week that looked at the potential impact of expiring tax cuts on low-income taxpayers. The Republicans are spinning this, saying that low-income taxpayers will really be hard hit should these expire. The Democrats are saying you're not looking carefully enough at our plan.
Well, you know, there are occasionally things in Washington that find me laughing out loud. And when I read this study, I just literally was laughing out loud in my living room for a very simple reason. The Democrats are all willing to vote tomorrow to extend the tax cuts for everybody on their first $200,000, if you're single, $250,000 of taxable income. That's what the president wants to do. The Republicans, as best I can tell, all say that they are in favor of doing this. So why would there be an issue about whether the poor will be affected? Well, it's because tax cuts for everybody on their first roughly $250,000 of income are being held hostage by the Republicans, who say, we will block this unless we also give tax cuts to Warren Buffett and Donald Trump and the Forbes family and everybody else who is super rich.
Mm-hmm. Can you go back for a moment and tell me what the government, what the Republicans thought they would be able to get from these tax cuts for the very wealthy among us? Did they think that it would spark business, that we would get new businesses, that people would get raises in companies? What was the thinking?
Well, the Republicans fundamentally want to lower taxes on the highest income Americans. I mean, they want to lower taxes generally. But their campaign contributions, like those of the Democrats, come from people at the very top, and theirs tend to come from people who really hate paying their taxes. So this is a fundamental mantra. One of the things that we have not debated very much is, do lower tax rates, as promised, produce greater economic growth?
Right.
And the data seems to be quite clear that they do not. And the reasons for that, I think, are fairly clear but not widely understood. Essentially, when we had much higher tax rates and much greater economic growth, if you are a business owner, your incentive is to keep reinvesting in the business and building up its wealth, not to withdraw the money and put it into unproductive but pleasurable spending of that money. Artwork, multiple homes, vacations, servants, to go along with those, and instead keep putting it back into the business to grow it. When I was on with you, was it 2 weeks ago?
I think so, yes.
I pointed out that, you know, President Bush had said that his tax cuts would make us all better off and grow the economy, and he did so long after the internet bubble collapsed, which was in March and April. He wasn't even nominated until summer, and was quite insistent that, you know, pay no attention to what happened in the internet bubble. My tax cuts will make the economy grow. Well, the fact is, the numbers are now in, and they show that Americans earned $2.7 trillion less income during the 8 years of the Bush administration than if incomes had remained at the level of 2000.
Except for those people who did fancy artwork, right?
Well, you know, I take people at their word that they are doing what they believe. But I also believe in empirical evidence. And the empirical evidence has been, you know, fewer jobs created during the Bush administration than the Eisenhower administration. Very few jobs created even up until 2007 when we had our second economic reversal. And I think that the evidence that tax cuts pave the road to riches is, if not non-existent, extremely scant. The evidence all seems to run in the opposite direction. And I realize that's counterintuitive. You would tend to think, well, lower taxes, there should be more investment. But think about this for a moment. Imagine dealing with a different tax, the estate tax, that everything is taxed when you die. There's no exemption. Government comes and assesses the value of your assets and takes 50% of them. And you want to leave your children $1 million. Well, if there's a 50% tax rate, you're going to save $2 million. You're going to reduce your consumption, increase your investment to get $2 million to pay the tax to leave your children the $1 million. But if you cut the tax rate to zero, hey, you only have to save $1 million, and you can go out and consume, perhaps unproductively, and not invest another $1 million.
Mm-hmm. David K. Johnston is our guest this hour. He is Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, author of Free Lunch, How the Wealthiest Americans Enrich Themselves at Government Expense and Stick You with the Bill. We'll talk with him more this hour about how much money in taxes corporations are paying. He did the big expose on Enron a few years back. He's now distinguished visiting lecturer in the College of Law and Whitman School of Management at Syracuse University. We're looking this hour at the tax code, at what kinds of specifically what the tax rates have been during the Bush administration tax cuts, what the Democrats have for plans, if anybody knows what their plans are. They haven't been very forthcoming in terms of keeping these tax cuts going or letting them expire, and what it is they do to spur growth in this economy as well. There's also this perception that everybody's angry as we enter these midterms and that people believe that they're being taxed way too heavily. Where does that perception come from? Well, welcome your phone calls. I think we have one line open. Oh, and what's our number? God darn it, I put it on a piece of paper and I've got too many pieces of paper. Oh, where? The number is, oh, thank you. John Munson is helping me out, and Rhonda. We're in Madison. That's why I'm temporarily confused. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up next hour of our program, Robert Coles will be joining us. Robert Coles is a psychiatrist, a humanitarian. He worked in the civil rights movement, and he taught a wonderful course for many years at Harvard on literature. And he looks at writers who have been keen observers of the human experience, particularly the experience among people who are poor. His book is wonderful. It's titled Handing One Another Along, Literature and Social Reflection. We go to phone calls now for David, and let's start our calls with John from Madison. Hi, John.
Morning, guys.
Hi.
I was a little bit disappointed at your comment, the Warren Buffett, Bill Gates comment. I don't think that seriously advances the argument any more than a $900 toilet seat advances the argument on defense spending. I do think that the serious discussion is, you know, what's the most efficient way of getting money into the economy? Is it taxation and then directed spending by the government with its, you know, bureaucratic waste and those sorts of problems? Or is it tax cuts with tax incentives for investment, which, of course, you have greedy, rapacious guys at the top who are going to just hoard it. And I think the issue is, you know, what's the most efficient way of either pushing money into the economy by taxing and spending, or pulling money into the economy by tax incentives, et cetera.
All right, David, let's get a response. David?
Well, I cited Buffett and Gates not to demonize them. Mr. Gates, you know, became very wealthy because he was very smart and saw something that all the people at IBM, whose motto was think, failed to recognize. Mr. Buffett's a little bit different story. I have written about Mr. Buffett and his supping with a very large spoon at the expense of the taxpayers, who subsidize him in many astonishing ways. In one case, giving him $100 million of tax money to build a business that cost him $40 million.
Ooh.
And my next book, when it's out next year, The Fine Print, will have a lot more about the extent to which Mr. Buffett really derives part of his fortune from these gifts of taxpayer money that far exceed in terms of his wealth what we do for the poor. I mean, on a scale, they're vast. But the caller's point is exactly correct. What we want to have is a tax system that is designed first and foremost to raise the revenue necessary to support the United States of America. And how much do we need to support the United States of America? There's a new report out today, for example, about how the tremendous increase in real terms in military spending since 2000, an increase that now makes military spending as a share of the economy the largest it's been since the end of World War II, has actually left us with an older, less capable system, and the study argues made us worse off. How we spend the money is very crucial, and how we incent people to save and invest is very crucial. And the point I was trying to get at was, cutting tax rates doesn't cause you to be encouraged to save money today. And let me make just one example about that, Kathleen. Imagine you're an executive of a big company, and the CEO comes and says, I want to be paid $100 million this year. If the tax rate is 70% on that $100 million, you're going to reasonably look at him and say, I'm sorry, I'm not going to give $70 million more to the federal government so that you can get $30 million. We'll work out something different. But if the tax rate's 35%, it's a lot easier to say, sure. And when you do this, pay the $100 million, in a company of 10,000 workers, you're now, that works out to be $100,000 per worker. I'm sorry, $10,000 per worker. So the tax system and the lower rates have unexpected effects, and we now have lots of evidence of this.
Mm-hmm. David, let me ask you about the anger in this country. Witness the Tea Party and witness the midterm elections and what everybody's complaining about. There's a general feeling, as you well know, that people are taxed too heavily. They're mad as heck, and they don't want to take it anymore. They think the government is taking an incredible amount of their money. When you look at the tax code, and you've studied it pretty thoroughly, some of their money is going to the government, but it's not as much as most people think that it is. So why is there this widespread feeling among a lot of voters that they're just they're not doing well because the government's taking all their dough?
Right. First of all, the federal government's getting about 11 or 12% right now of total national income. That's down significantly from before President Bush. Secondly, I would not rely on the news accounts here. There are a number of polls that have not gotten big coverage, which show very strong support for the idea that we should maintain the tax cuts for the poor and the middle class and the moderately affluent, and not for those people in the top 2 or 3%. This is one of the problems with news coverage, is that there's this beast of the news media that once it starts feeding on something, the herd runs, and you get constant reinforcement of what the herd says, which is why so many different groups try to focus the news media in some direction, because once they get a narrative going, it's the accepted narrative. So I see evidence that there is a group of people who are very angry, but I don't see evidence that this is very widespread and that it is the dominant position, only that it's the dominant issue covered by the media. And let me give you a little example of the kind of distortions that I mean by that. Back 2 weeks before tax day, dreaded tax day, come April,
right.
There were a series of polls that came out. They showed that the highest approval rating in the country, the poll done by Fox News showed that the highest approval rating in the country was for President Obama at 50%. The second highest rating was for the IRS at 49%, statistically no different. The Tea Party was at 36%. Sarah Palin was at 14%. Congressman Boehner was at 12%, although among Republicans he did a little better. He was at 14%. Now, anybody who was watching Fox News in particular certainly would never have thought that the Internal Revenue Service was twice as popular as
right.
as Ms. Palin. And by the way, Fox News never mentioned this on the air.
Hmm.
And it's their poll.
We are going to welcome more phone calls for David. David K. Johnston is our guest. He is a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter for the New York Times, who revealed that Enron did not pay taxes. He knows more about taxes and the history of taxes and politics and taxes than any human being I know, and we're always delighted to have him on the air because he really lives up to the Ideas Network. We'll take more phone calls for you. If you're on hold, please stay where you are. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number is 800. Today only we're broadcasting from Madison, 642-1234, 800-642-1234. I'm Kathleen Dunn. We are also in our Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. John Munson is joining me here in Madison. And as a regular listener to this program, you know you are always going to hear something worthwhile. David is a very popular guest on this show. You can see why, because he's quite knowledgeable and people ask us, please have him back. Please have him back. And so we do. As a regular listener to this program, you know that you'll hear worthwhile conversations, and today we are asking you to put a value on this program. Your contribution, it is absolutely vital. Support what you're hearing now and everything else you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio by making a gift in any amount, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Hello, well, John.
Kathleen, I have a couple of good pieces of news to report. First of all, we made our dollar-for-dollar match, so we earned an extra $1,000 already,
you.
And the hour's only about half over. And the other good news is we already have 28 pledges this hour, which is a good pace. The only dark cloud on the distant horizon is that we have 22 pledges to go to make this hour's goal of 50 pledges of support to Wisconsin Public Radio. Please be the next person to add to the growing list of people who support Wisconsin Public Radio at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
We ought to be able to make that goal of 50 callers.
You bet.
Within this hour. I think we will. You may have found yourself hovering near the radio, drawn into a great discussion. You need to get somewhere, but the discussion is just pretty interesting. You appreciate the guest's knowledge and also the caller's questions and views. If that has happened to you, it's happened to me. It happens to me all the time. Make your pledge of support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Maybe you've been listening to WPR for a while without pledging. Well, maybe you haven't given because you didn't know that we were listener-supported. Well, we are, so now you do know. Nearly 40% of our budget comes from listeners. Or maybe you wanted to listen for a while and see if you liked what you heard.
Well, you're listening. You're still listening all these months or years later. So how about a donation? After you've given, you really will feel great. It's nice to be involved with an organization. And if you give money, you're really involved. Pledge now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Your pledge is our bread and butter. It's what sustains us and helps to keep us healthy. You turn on your radio every day and can enjoy great programs.
Yes, you can, and it's not possible without your help. Please donate right now. Again, it's WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you in advance for making this program possible.
Hey, you know, we all look for ways to economize with both our money and our time. Well, here's a way you can economize while supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. Why not become a sustaining member? Choose an amount that's right for you and have it charged monthly from your bank account or credit card.
And if you are a sustainer, when you're a sustainer, your pledge will renew automatically each year, so we won't need to send you renewal mailings. It saves us paper and time and postage costs, and you can become a sustaining member right now by making an ongoing monthly contribution. And I love this. This is one of my favorite part of the pledge drives. We will plant a tree on your behalf, and then you can go and visit your tree. Isn't that nice? Give now by whatever payment is best for you, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Again, we need 19 more pledges before 10 o'clock to make this hour's goal. So pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And merci beaucoup, John. We continue our conversation with David, and let's go to more phone calls. Our number, we're broadcasting from Madison, so I don't want you to be as confused as I am about the number. So I will give it to you, 800, because it's right in front of me, 642-1234, 800-642-1234. Let's take a call from Jeff in Eau Claire. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, it's me. Thank you for taking my call. I have two items for your guest, and if I could be so bold to present a criticism about your program. I love the program, but I think it's pronounced Pulitzer. The two items...
Yeah, I think it's Pulitzer, actually. Pulitzer. Somebody look it up for us, okay? Because I hear it pronounced all the time.
I thought I sent it to you. Anyway, I love your program. I really do.
Thank you.
Mr. K. Johnson is he's great, and I wish he some of the items he puts forward could actually be presented to the president. So, I don't know. I think that we're stagnated in this country. We just don't move anywhere. But I have two items I was hoping that the guest could address. The first item is why is there I'm not too smart, so I'm wondering why is there a $106,000 cap on Social Security taxes? And the second item was if he had heard anything about the chair of the Tax Writing Committee, Blanche Lincoln's comment yesterday that she is willing to let the Bush tax cuts go without expiring. Does that mean that that they will never expire? And what would and she's looking for a compromise. And what if he could look into that? What would that compromise entail?
Okay.
All right, David. And first, how do you pronounce it? You've got one of those prizes.
Well, I thought it was Pulitzer, but that's why I'm not in radio. I deal with written words, not spoken words. I tried radio when I was a teenager.
Okay, we'll say Pulitzer.
Let's deal with the $106,000 cap first. The reason that only $106,000 of wages are subject to the Social Security tax has to do with the idea that it is not a welfare program, it is a social insurance program. It's a way of guaranteeing that if you work in your old age, if things don't work out, you know, your life could be going along great and suddenly something can happen that's unexpected, you will have a minimal income on which to sustain yourself. Now, significantly, the tax used to be against 90% of wages. It's now only against 83%. That's because incomes at the very top have been pulling away from everybody else. We have more than 100 people a year now, year after year, whose salary and other compensation that's subject to the Medicare tax, which is the same as the Social Security tax without a cap, is over $50 million a year. And most of the growth of incomes in this country has been among this very narrow slice of taxpayers, a small fraction of 1%, who make more than $1 million a year, whereas people at the median wage, which is a little under or a little above each year, $500 a week, $26,000 a year, that's been stagnant for years. So that's the reason for that cap, is so that it's not a welfare program. There is certainly a lot of discussion about, well, what if we raise the cap a little bit? Some people have suggested to $125,000. That would further squeeze the most heavily taxed people in the country, who are two-income couples in six-figure incomes. They are much more heavily taxed than people who make $10 million, $20 million, $100 million. But certainly is one of the things we ought to be talking about, is how to finance Social Security. I was not aware of Senator Lincoln, who's a Democrat from Arkansas, statement yesterday, but I'm not surprised that some politicians, looking at their polling data and other information, have decided that the message is too subtle to get across, that they want to extend the Bush tax cuts on the first $250,000 of taxable income. And better to suggest, well, I'm open to the idea of just extending them for everybody. The problem is, how are you going to pay for this? If you don't adjust spending, then all you're doing is borrowing more money. And the Bush tax cuts were all financed by the government borrowing money that it didn't collect in order to spend. And as a result, all of the income taxes you paid in January and February of this year just equaled the interest on the Bush tax cuts.
Oh, my. Can you please tell me, David, before we go back to phone calls, why it is that politicians seem to be a little bit gutless when it comes to deciding what they are going to do in terms of tax cuts? Why would the Democrats entertain the position, which seems to me would not be very politically popular, to let the tax cuts continue for those who are very wealthy?
Well, I think this is part of a broad general malaise that we have in this country. That extends far beyond the issues of taxes. We spend very little time talking about the future, talking about the America we want to have when you and I are going to be gone, Kathleen, and much more time worried about today, right now.
Yes.
And that's a real problem. Part of this I would attribute to our national reaction to two big events in our history. One was Watergate, which caused a lot of people to just throw up their arms and say, I don't want anything to do with politics. Which is an incredibly unfortunate response to that, and the news media bears some blame for that in the way they covered this. And the second was 9/11, where here is, and I know some readers are going to blanch when I say this, but here was nothing more than an evil publicity stunt. It had no military significance whatsoever. There is no power on earth with the capacity to occupy one inch of this country. And yet we treated it like this was something military. And we utterly failed in our fundamental mission, which was, as President Bush put it, to get Osama bin Laden dead or alive, and diverted ourselves off to other issues. And unfortunately, in our political discourse, we've become so partisan. We have these districts that are very liberal or very conservative instead of being competitive by being close to the mix of voters in this country, that we keep ending up with these policies that are designed to gain a little advantage here or there, rather than think about the future. And maybe to make a business analogy, you'll recall that about 20 years ago, the Coca-Cola company decided to change its formula to be more like Pepsi because they thought it would help them gain an additional fraction of one percentage point of sales in market share. And, of course, it was a disaster that cost them a lot of market share. We are not thinking about the country enduring and its future. We're thinking more and more about how well off can I be today?
Yeah. We're not thinking about this. We're all in this together. And we are all in this together, aren't we? David K. Johnston is our guest. He is Pulitzer or Pulitzer. I'm still not convinced of how you pronounce it, but we'll look it up. Pulitzer, I'll say that today. He's a wonderful journalist, author of Free Lunch, How the Wealthiest Americans Enrich Themselves at Government Expense and Stick You with the Bill. He's working on a new book, as you heard him say, The Fine Print, and he has worked for a number of newspapers in this country, the New York Times for many, many years. He also worked at the Philadelphia Inquirer and the LA Times and the Detroit Free Press. More phone calls. A couple lines are open if you'd like to join this conversation. 800-642-1234 is the number we're broadcasting today from Madison. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. And let's go to Ben in Merrill, our next caller. Hi, Ben.
Good morning.
Hi.
My idea was that to eliminate the taxes for the working man so he had more money to spend, thus increasing the economy and also increasing the amount of profits for the businesses that they spend the money on.
Did you say eliminate the taxes, Ben?
Pardon?
Did you say eliminate?
Well, decrease them to the point where just about eliminate anyway.
And what income level are you talking?
Oh, I'm talking to people that are working for a living. Anybody that's working for a living shouldn't be paying taxes in the first place because it's a matter of you're supposed to be paying taxes on your profits, and those are not profits. Those are wages.
David?
Well, Adam Smith, still in print since 1776, observed that if you tax people on the necessities of life, all you do is raise the general level of prices. And it's not productive. And Michael Graetz, who just retired as a professor at Yale Law, I guess he went to Columbia to teach there, has written a book about this in which he suggests that we eliminate the income tax for incomes under $100,000 and go to a value-added tax on consumption. We have to pay our bills, Ben, and the fact is that the largest single chunk of the money comes from people in the under $100,000 class because there's so many of them. But it's a fundamental issue. By the way, when we were on break, Kathleen, I went to one of those wonderful internet pronouncer things. And It's Pulitzer.
Pulitzer. Thank you. All right. This is something that I will now remember for the rest of my life. I've been doing it wrong. I've been alternating between Pulitzer and Pulitzer. So now I realize I was totally wrong. Thank you. And it's nice that you have one of those as well.
Kathleen, let me just, one other point. You know, when the income tax was adopted in 1913, it was intended to apply to what were then called surplus incomes. It was only with World War II and the decision after World War II by the Democrats to keep taxing all of these people who suddenly had cash incomes that we've ended up with the system that we have. So it's a very valid thing for us to debate. Do we want people who are working-class people, middle-class people, to be paying income tax, and how much do we want them to be paying? And that has to be part of a discussion about, well, you know, how much government do you want, and what do you want it to be like?
Let's go to Muhammad in Madison. Hi, Muhammad.
Hi, Kathleen. I heard your guest earlier mention two things, the Tea Party and anger. And what I'm having trouble with is all of a sudden people who are angry, who act out in the way these people do, are getting some recognition and consideration in any other venue, in my home, at school, my children at school, on my job, in the shopping mall. If I resort to anger and act out, I'm not going to be given very much regard. In fact, I may find myself in a lot of trouble. And it sort of reminds me of before 9/11, if you heard mention the word Muslim, people would think about the Nation of Islam and Louis Farrakhan, who make a very, very puny numbers compared to probably the 20 million Muslims in the United States. And I'm wondering why, you know, we give these people all of this credit. They're going to make change that we didn't get from Barack Obama. I don't understand that.
David.
Well, you know, I referred earlier to the news media that I spent 40-some years in as this beast. And it tends to notice sparkly things out there. So when you have demonstrations against the war in Vietnam, you know, they got disproportionate coverage to the amount of protest in some cases. The beast sometimes pays attention to protests by groups that have public relations staffs, as the Tea Party has, paid for by very wealthy Americans in the background to draw attention to its events. Well, events by people with different views get very little attention. And Muhammad is quite right about how we tend to think about, because of the way the news media covers these things, different groups. I mean, I think very many people in this country would be surprised to know that there are about as many Muslims as Jews in America, for example. Just from the way that we cover the news. And anger is not a very good way to run government and address its problems. Study and contemplation are better, but we don't live in a society that reveres study and contemplation. In fact, we live in a society where I would argue that we continually denigrate people by calling them elites or denouncing school teachers rather than encouraging that which democracy requires, which is careful, thoughtful examination and then vigorous debate.
Yeah, amen. We sure need that. Thank you, David, as always. When's the new book coming out?
Oh, probably June or July. It's later than I wanted, but it'll be out, and it will have a very different take. It's focused on prices and cost of living and the reasons that so many Americans are struggling today, and it's stuff that the news media has either not covered at all or done in the most superficial way.
All right, so you'll be on with us to talk about it.
I'd be delighted.
Thank you, David. Thanks. Thanks, as always, for all of your knowledge, all of your study and contemplation, and hear ye, we need a lot more of that. David K. Johnson, our guest this hour, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, author of Free Lunch, How the Wealthiest Americans Enrich Themselves at Government Expense and Stick You with the Bill. He is distinguished visiting lecturer in the College of Law and Whitman School of Management at Syracuse University. and a guy who really knows money issues. This is our fall membership drive, and I think that was a nice lead-in to our asking you for a contribution to the hours and hours that we give you every day that deal with study and contemplation and fun sometimes. I'm Kathleen Dunn. John Munson is joining me in our Madison studios, and we're asking you to think about how much you rely on WPR's ideas for enlightening and informative discussions. Just think about the last hour and how much meat there was in that. You may not agree with everything he said, but he's going to make you study and contemplate alternatives to what it is that he had to say. We're here to remind you that we rely on you, to keep programs like this one on the air. It's our fall membership drive. A gift of any amount will make a big difference in our ability to pay for the programs that you count on. Make a gift now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Well, Kathleen, 41 pledges this
All
hour.
Right,
yeah,
good.
We're cooking now. We need 9 more in about the next 8 or 9 minutes in order to make this hour's goal of 50. And I just wanted to mention something. One of our listeners who made a pledge this hour, Paula from Kiel, who says, "I have always wanted to donate and never been in a position to do so. The sustaining membership allows me to give a monthly amount that is within my budget. I really appreciate the opportunity to support public radio." Well, Paula, thank you so much. And I'd be willing to bet that there are a lot of people out there in Paula's situation. You can make a small monthly donation, $5 a month, $10 a month, whatever you can afford. Make it a sustaining donation. We don't have to send out a renewal notice. We save money that way, and your support is ongoing. And of course, we're going to plant a tree in your name in the Schwamigan-Nicolay National Forest.
I love that.
So
yes.
It's a win-win-win all the way around. But thanks to Paula and thousands of people just like her who have made pledges during this drive. You can be next at WPR.org. Or 888-202-2552.
I know you've been enjoying the conversation with David K. Johnson. You know, there are sometimes we have guests like this, and you always love what he has to say. He's a very smart guy, and he's broken some very big news stories. When he talks about the press being the beast, I think he's on to something. I don't know if I would use the term the beast, because I watch news, as everybody does, and I'm kind of a news junkie. But there is a lot of truth to the fact that a lot of the stories are the same, and they pound the story over and over and over again in the tea parties and the protests, and people don't think the president is from America and all this junk. And you look at what he has to say, it's about study, it's about contemplation, it's about issues of being in this together, of fairness and of knowing what the truth is. And he's a marvelous guest. Why isn't he all over the place? In turn, you know, the pundits, why isn't he one of them? He may have a political perspective in a way, but he's also really studied these issues. And we pay attention to people like that. We think this guy is worth your listening to. So please make a pledge and put a value on the programs that you hear. WPR.org. Or 888-202-2552, up to 42 pledges, John.
It only takes about 3 minutes of your time. Just tell us your name, your contact information, how much you want to give, and how you'd like to pay. Why not use a credit card? That saves time, postage, and paper, and, well, it puts your money to work right away. Or consider signing up for EFT, electronic funds transfer from your bank account. That saves even more time, postage, and paper. No matter how you choose to give, just make sure you do. Take those 3 minutes right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Just moments left in this hour, Kathleen, to make a contribution to support this hour of programming. 8 pledges to go to get to our goal.
All right.
Of 50 for the hour. And Kathleen, I know that, I mean, you've been doing this for a long time. You've got all these great guests coming in, and people enjoy your show. We need those people right now to make a statement about that and go to the web and make a pledge at WPR.org or call in at 888-202-2552.
You get value from this program. I know you do. I get value from it or I wouldn't do it. I love what I do and get new information all of the time. We are looking for 50 pledges, as John said, in just, we're at 8:43, so we're looking at 7.
7 in the next 5 or 10 minutes.
All right, so we can do that. If you call, please, WPR, or you can go to the website, WPR.org, or 888-202-2552.
Well, listeners who rely on Wisconsin Public Radio are the most dependable source of income for this station. Hey, you know what? Maybe you could make a $1,000 donation.
That'd be good.
That money would help make this station available to everyone. Maybe you can make a contribution on behalf of someone who can't. That'd be a good way to look at it. 7 pledges to go to make our goal of 50 for this hour, 43 in so far, and we have that nice $1,000 match at the beginning of the hour. So
that was great.
We started out $1,000 ahead, and that always helps. Now 5 pledges to go before we get to the end of this program.
5 pledges. All right, let's move it along. 888-202, I'm getting excited, 888-202-2552, or you can always go to WPR.org and make a pledge that way. 5 pledges left. To make 50, we can go beyond that. That's all right.
Yeah, we don't need to stop. Yeah.
No, we don't.
You know, you might be wondering, how much should I give? And that's always up to you. The amount of your pledge is always under your control. You're the one who decides when to pledge. You're the one who decides if you pledge. You're the one who decides how you pay. And you decide the amount. It's all in your hands, because your contribution of any amount gets turned into great programs, programs like the one we were listening to this hour, programs like the one we're going to hear next hour, and all day long, every day, 24 hours a day on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So please make that pledge right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Thanks, John, and we'll continue to give you programs that really mean something. And that's good. That's really a good thing. And the next hour is going to be marvelous, too. So please stay with us. Thank you, John Munson. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour. And thanks to Rhonda for running the board for me here in Madison. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for answering phone calls. Thanks for all of your pledges and calls, one and all.